My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me. And I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic, as well as horrible computers. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan, and actually in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
This is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm good now, but 20 minutes of hell with my computer, but I'm doing good now. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how are you?
I'm okay.
And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
Good. We have a big barred owl in our yard, and he said hello to me tonight, so I am on the moon.
Yeah, I saw an owl yesterday, as a matter of fact. It flew, was flying along the side of my car. It was kind of odd.
Yeah, I saw that post. That was super cool. I just wish I had known what kind of owl it was. That would have been
cooler.
That
means you're going to die.
Eric.
I didn't really get details because it was dark, so I was only saw it with flashes as my car light because it was like at 11 o'clock.
Have you seen the movie The Fourth Kind?
Yes.
Oh,
are you sure it was an owl?
I hope it was a good sign because
did you lose time?
I was coming back from my one of my football drafts, rotisserie football drafts, or fantasy football drafts. So I got Tom Brady.
Whatever.
I got Tom. Abe, you're a Patriots fan. You should be. On my side, unless you're...
I watch football. I don't take sides. I watch the destruction of the people on the stage.
I just don't understand this. He lives in New England. Okay, whatever. All right.
Yes, apparently he's sane.
I have to spend 3 days in a hotel room with him. Believe me, he's not sane.
Oh, please. You're the one who's saying he's saying that way past midnight to gamble.
Here comes the stories. And listening
to goddamn girl songs all the way back and forth.
Hey, nothing wrong with Taylor Swift and nothing wrong with...
That's Taylor. All you listen to!
Hey, Abe, next time you can drive yourself.
Exactly.
Oh, he got quiet real quick.
It sure did. That's what you get for insulting Tom Brady. And you're a Patriots fan, too, or you should be.
Whatever. If I don't make it next year, I'll make it next year.
So be it. All right. So, let's see. A couple of things. First off, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Ascanty Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it on Google Play, Stitcher, and the iTunes Store.
You had a couple of weeks off, though, right?
Yeah. Last weekend, I was out east with you folks doing our stuff. And then this weekend, weird stuff happened, and actually neither of us are going to be available, so we're not recording this weekend either.
All right. Very well. So it's
I was wondering how he's going to handle doing four podcasts in 1 week.
Well, I've done it before.
Indeed. Mike, you do a couple other podcasts as well as a blog?
Yeah, the blog is on Natural Selections. The podcasts are You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, which is a podcast, Bullish Prophets and Bots, a Westworld podcast, and Searching for American Gods about the Starz TV series American Gods.
Nice. And instead of asking Chrissy that you do things, Abe will explain in a second, I did see, Chrissy, your picture of the barn owl, or the barred owl, or whatever type of owl.
Yes, you did, and you clicked like on it, because I just posted, pretty, isn't he? He was looking right at me. It was like he was waiting for his photo up.
Is it legal to love owls?
I think
only in some states.
Probably Canada.
It did. All right, very well. And so, hey, where can people find? How can people find Chrissy and see all her blog and works and whatnot, as well as other things?
Well, if you come to our site, darkdiscussions.com, you can look in the right side, and there'll be a link to Chrissy's stuff right there.
So, Eric, what else can people find on the darkdiscussions.com website?
Oh, they can find a bunch of stuff. They can find an articles section where they can read articles written by myself as well as others. And on the front page of the site, there's a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is an online service that allows you to support online artists such as podcasters. If you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing this podcast, you can click on that link on the darkdiscussions.com page, or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover. We take all submissions and draw them on a quarterly basis to take a listener's Patreon supporter's topic and use it for a show. So if you'd like to support us, please do so. Go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page.
Yep, and we do have one coming up soon, Straw Dogs, which was chosen randomly by us and the last quarter, and that was Chris Jenner who had chosen that one, one of our listeners and contributors on the Facebook group.
Hope Mr. Jenner understands, but we're hitting a busy season, so maybe a little bit before we get there.
All right, so let's discuss what we're going to discuss for tonight. So, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight, our topic?
All right, tonight we are talking about the Korean zombie movie Train to Busan.
That's right, Train to Busan, 2016 horror film, I believe, for most people.
It was 2016 for South Korea, July 20th.
Right, and it was presented at Cannes originally that same year. So, yeah, it's a 2016 film for basically the entire world. As Abe said, it's a Korean film. Obviously, if you're familiar with Busan, obviously that's a city in Korea. It's like their Miami, a huge beach town. And this film is called Train to Busan. It's directed by Sang Ho Yeon, and he also did the prequel, which came out the same year, called Seoul Station. He's mostly known as an animator. He's done a lot of animated films, written and directed animated films in Korea, and this is one of his few live-action films. It stars a bunch of folks, and their names are Yu Gong, Dong Suk Ma. Basically, no one that anyone in the States would know, except for maybe Dong Suk Ma. Dong Suk Ma was actually a martial artist, yeah, in the United States. His real name was Don Lee, and when he works in Korea, he goes Dong Suk Ma as his name. And Don Lee was the tough guy in the film. We'll talk about him. So yeah, we'll skip who the actors are because again, not very familiar. Most of the actors here weren't in other Korean films that we've seen in the States, such as I Saw the Devil or Thirst or any of those others. So whatnot. The film was written by a guy named Joo Suk Park, and I don't know much about him. The film has 95% Rotten Tomatoes score out of 87 critics. Highly praised world round.
I always want to know who the 5% are.
Yeah, you always wonder.
Are they just like the racists that don't like Koreans? I don't.
Well, no, Mike, because even The Godfather has only like 97%, so there's 3% of people out there that, well, maybe they don't like Italians. I don't know what the hell it is, but
it could be just a bias towards foreign films in general.
Or just a bias against something, because why would Godfather only have 97%?
Let's keep in mind that some of these South Korean films and some foreign films in general end up having remakes to be transferred to the States. So it could be that percentage who believes that it's just because it's a foreign film that's not going to work well, or just is too alien to Western audiences.
Well, I would agree with that in some cases, Abe, but again, my example of Oscar-winning American films don't even have 100%, right? I mean, Mike, Baseball Hall of Fame, there's never 100% that get in. Even
yeah, but I also understand why those people are idiots. They have the people who don't vote for the Baseball Hall, there's reasons if you pay attention to why they don't vote for certain people that makes some sense. Here it's just like or dislike. What don't you like? What was the problem? And especially since it's something that, like The Godfather, everybody's going to go, well, you have to see The Godfather, and it might not be for you. This is a Korean zombie film. I have to imagine just being given that description, it's going to self-select an awful lot of people.
Another thing, too, about the rating system on Rotten Tomatoes and others is sometimes it could be just a slight bit of difference in terms of the score that could rate them as rotten, even though they're mostly positive.
Well, right. But even that wouldn't explain the 5%. In this film, for example, that just didn't like it. What was it that they didn't like that made them?
One of the rotten reviews is a Spanish review. That's kind of funny.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, so it's a curiosity. I haven't looked to see those bad reviews to see why they consider it a negative film or a mediocre film or whatever. Even if it's just a little bit off, like you said, Abe, the question is, why is it a little bit off and not like, yeah, this is a great film, period.
But, 95% for a zombie film is very good. It's a subgenre of horror that has really, in the past number of years, had to some people overstayed its welcome or been
done to death that, you know, to really get a score that high, you had to really deliver to get, you know, to really nail it with the audiences or the critics in general.
Well, generally, I would say anything over 40% for a horror film by Rotten Tomatoes most likely is going to be a good film anyway, because horror films always are divisive with mainstream critics anyway.
I just found all the rotten reviews on the site, and one of them gave it a score of a C, which is, I guess, rotten, but that's still okay. Another one gave it a 2.5 out of 5. Another one Spanish, and another one thought that it should be as good as Snowpiercer since it's on a train. So,
and Korean.
There you go.
Right. Well, and I think this may actually have a better rating on Rotten Tomatoes than Snowpiercer, so that doesn't even make sense.
Like Snowpiercer, I understand. That's a weird film. I love the film, but it's a weird film.
I'm just telling you what I found.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm just reporting.
Yeah. You know what's one thing I don't see about this film? I don't hear anyone saying, this isn't a zombie film, it's an infected film. Because basically this is 28 days later on a train.
I would say the remake of Dawn of the Dead on a train.
Yeah, I would say that more likely, because they are zombies. They're not exactly...
Or a World War Z on a train.
Yeah.
War Z is what I was thinking of when I was watching it today.
Yeah.
Well, because you have the masses that are kind of squeezed together.
Well, there's some reasons too. We'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into it.
All right. So we're talking way too much about the rating system. It depends on your like, and it appears five out of 100 people don't like it. So whatever. I guess we can discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with you, Eric.
I honestly can't remember how I heard about this film. But I guess it was getting some buzz and I decided to check it out, which was a little unusual for me because, as my co-host will attest to, I've complained about being zombied out. And this movie actually started to turn that around for me. So I watched it because it was getting very positive word of mouth, and it turned out to be one of the best zombie movies I've ever seen. It's got good characters that you actually care about, so there are stakes, and you actually care about what happens to these people. And as the title would imply, the whole thing takes place on a train, which is an enclosed space, thus making the zombies much more threatening than if you're in an open field where you can run away from them. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this movie a lot. I rewatched it today because I hadn't seen it since it came on VOD back in 2016 or whenever. I was very surprised to find it held up as well as it did. And there's even one point in the movie where, even though I'd seen it before, I found myself totally tensing up because it was so stressful. Good zombie movie.
All right, very good. For me, I just began hearing buzz about it, and then it popped up on iTunes and nowhere else at the time, and for purchase. So I just purchased it right off the bat because I just heard a lot of good things about it, and a lot of Korean genre films are solid anyway. And even though I'm like you, Eric, I'm zombied out pretty much, so it wasn't like I was looking at the monster or something. But really, it was more the fact that it was a genre film. When I saw it, I thought it was a fantastic film. I put it on my top 10 horror films of that year. I know it became Dark Discussion's top horror film of the year after we combined all our lists and gave our aggregate score. I think I had it as like fourth on mine, because I think I had Autopsy of Jane Doe and Sun Choke and Goddess of Love ahead of it. But again, this is still a solid film. I mean, top five for sure. And I rewatched it two nights ago, same as you, Eric. Haven't seen it since the one time I watched it back in 2016. And like you, it holds up. still, it was really good. I actually enjoyed it a lot differently this time because I followed the character development and the side characters a lot more than I did the first time watching it. It was the first time I was watching it. It was just a kinetic action, and I was like wowed. And so I was able to follow other things in this watch. And all in all, either way, watching it, it was a great film, absolutely fantastic film. Mike.
Yeah, so I just rewatched it. I think it was only my second watch. And this hit, as everyone said, just the buzz kind of came out of nowhere for this movie. And there's like, might have been the last film. It was certainly one of the last films I watched before doing our 2016 review episode, and quickly rocketed up to, if not the top, to near the top of my list. Yeah, and it's just a really solid entry on a lot of ways because, you know, they don't just do any one little thing right. They do a lot of things right. They did the characters right. They got moments that are kind of, you know, pants-pooping, intense action scenes, some really neat set pieces, and I think of the stopover. I don't remember what the city was called, like their first stop on the train.
Right.
Yeah, that's the part I was referencing that got me all tense.
Yeah, and there's also the one that I thought was really good, which was the when they're pinned under the train at the end.
Yep.
And it literally ends with a boss fight. So it's a good film. It has something to say to it, you know, which is another part of it. For the most part, you like the characters, with the one that you're not supposed to being the exception. So, yeah, it's just well done on every level and somehow manages, again, to squeeze new life out of an old genre. And again, though, this is something I've said before, is that the zombie films are always not about the zombies. You know, they're the disposable background villains. And so this affords you the ability to focus on the character development.
All right, very good. Chrissy?
I'm in agreement. You guys had raved about this movie. I am, even though I've kind of watched The Walking Dead, I'm really not a zombie person. So it takes a lot for you to get me to watch a zombie flick. I was really pleasantly surprised with this. I thought the action sequences were really well done, mostly because they were tight, they were tension-filled, and they didn't drag on with, like, here's a million great CGI things that you need to see, so we're going to add 10 more minutes of action, even though we don't really need it to get our point across. I did like all the characters. I did like that the pacing was really even, in that you had your breathers at the appropriate moment. It wasn't action, action, action. You know, like some of these films, you start with a good story build up, or you start with a story build up and then bang, and then it's all action and you lose everything. And this film did not do that. The character arcs were really well developed and worked themselves out. I did think the messaging was a little bit heavy-handed, but I think we all have to remind ourselves, too, that this is a Korean film, and their culture is different from American culture. So they're going to be driving home different messages than we are. And it was a very typical message that they were getting across, although I will say it is one that I have not seen done in many zombie films. That was kind of an interesting mashup. The imagery was fantastic. There was an undercurrent, and everybody else, there were the set pieces in this were really fantastic. Like that one under the train, Mike, was stunning. That was just amazing, the way that was shot. So anyway, that's my thoughts on it. I really, really enjoyed this, and I did not think I was going to, so it really, really surprised me.
Very good. Abe?
Well, back when the zombies were really at their peak, you know, I was on that train, no pun intended. But after a while, it kind of fizzled out because it was overdone, overplayed. And so I moved to other subgenres, and when I got with that this was, you know, on VOD, I watched it, and I was very, very pleasantly surprised and actually quite blown away. I'm not going to spoil where I put it on my list, but I had ranked this film pretty high out of all the films since 2010 to now. It's a very fast-paced movie. It's very visceral, and it really gives you very little time to really calm down, relax. It's moving at the pace as a train does. It's fast. And it's just one terrible obstacle after the other. The performances of the cast are very well done. There's some just really heart-wrenching moments and some moments that are just absolutely shocking. I will admit that the final scene had me choked out by it because it was just so well done. And it actually, for me, some people will compare it to Snowpiercer or like Dawn of the Dead, but for some reason, the way that this train becomes a small kind of like world for these characters started making me think of The Mist. How everybody starts turning each other out of the fear of the creatures outside their small enclosed space. And how everybody's trying to survive, doing the best to protect the ones they care about. It's a very good film. You'll still be able to follow it very well. And it's definitely a recommendation if you love zombie films. And it's definitely a recommendation for a film that does something just really well when most of the entries in the subgenre had just kind of overplayed themselves or become too predictable.
All right, very good. So that is our opinions and how we heard about the film. I like one thing Chrissy said about the CGI. Whatever there was of CGI, it fit really well. It was well done. It didn't distract. It wasn't low budget. And I would like to also add that some of the odd beats that you find in Korean films, like weird comedy in the middle of horror film or action film, was left out, and I felt that was really good too.
Well, that's another thing about how the film gives you very little relief. You know, doesn't give you a moment to kind of chuckle or kind of calm down. It keeps you going from one car to the next.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very happy about that they didn't have comic relief characters at all. Everybody was rock solid. If I did have an issue, maybe the part that you were talking about, Abe, where the people were turning on each other at the end, I had a little problem with that because there's way too many people that and too quickly, I think, that they turned on other people. Unlike The Mist, it was like a couple of days before all that happened. But we'll get into all that.
I have an issue with this movie myself, but I still love it.
Yeah, same here. Absolutely. I still love it too. All right. So, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. All right. This is pretty simple. While a zombie virus breaks out in South Korea, passengers struggle to survive on the train from Seoul to Busan.
Yeah, that's
it.
Yeah, and you know what's funny too about this whole movie is that Seoul and Busan really aren't in the film at all. Busan you don't even see at all. Seoul, right. you get to see the skyline, so it was kind of interesting.
Well, it's train to Busan, not train in Busan.
That's right. But oddly, when I saw the name, I was. When I first watched the film, I was actually surprised that, they didn't actually show the beach or anything like that, which is fine. You're absolutely right, Mike, what you just said. It was just curious. I thought it was funny. That's all.
It was kind of like the travelers were in a limbo from destination and the place of origin, you know, kind of trapped in this kind of in-between.
Right. This is exactly right. Yeah. All right. So
at this point, should we throw up the spoiler flag?
I would agree with that statement, Eric, yes.
All right.
Let's do it.
Spoiler flag is up.
All right, sounds good. So with that stated, we can discuss everything and anything. All right, so the film has the typical lead. I mean, some of the characters are fairly, I'll just say they're somewhat cliche. You know, the father that's not there for his daughter, divorcee. He has custody of the kid rather than the mother, so the mother is alluded to, may have been whatever. He works in finance or something where...
He's a hedge fund manager.
Yeah, yeah, and so that's a negative connotation to him. A couple of one-liners, but shots at that are thrown at him later by other characters basically sums up, you know, the Wall Street type person that it's like, whatever. And then there's even somewhat of a twist that indirectly the company he works for may have caused the issue.
Don't understand how that's possible.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a company they invested in or something like that.
That caused the problem, but I don't think they had a hand in the problem.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
I thought it was an odd thing as well, Eric. It was almost like they threw in some extra economic commentary that really doesn't work with that. Because, yeah, I mean, if a company's, everybody invests in hedge funds or mutual funds or whatever, and sometimes there's companies that there that screw up, you know, like Enron or whatever. I mean, who would have expected? So I don't know if it would be the mutual fund company as would be the fault, you know. So that didn't make sense to me.
Well, one thing I did find a little refreshing is that, there is a bit of a cliche of the father not paying enough attention to his daughter because he's too busy working, and he gives her a present that he's already given her before. But that's our hero, and that's the unusual part, is that they began the movie by showing us all these negative qualities about the person that we end up rooting for.
Well, right, because he's going to go, which I also like too, because his journey is really interesting, because I think in movies where I see this kind of an arc where, oh, the character has to learn to love, you know, it's done usually in American films in these big leaps and bounds and these obvious sweeps.
Yeah.
And here it's really subtle. It takes a while. And that was really nice to watch. I felt like I was watching a real person and not a story arc.
Yeah. And that's...
You know, I liked that a lot.
And it's interesting because the character... Well, the events are very fast, like all the major struggles because the zombies and the movement of the train and everything like that. Those are really quick, but the character development is nice and gradual. You know, it stays at a good, believable pace, even though everything else is very chaotic.
Also, a good thing about this, too, is that such a story could be sappy and obnoxious and like, who cares, I just want to see the actions and zombies, but the cast is, it's a huge cast, a very ensemble cast, that they don't spend too much time on the lead character except for the important beats to develop what, you know, the arc, as Chrissy said, so it keeps it fresh enough because we have other characters that obviously are still secondary characters but still feel as important, if not more important, in a character that we may even root for even more than our lead. So I think that helps it a lot, too.
Yeah.
And it keeps the story fresh rather than us rolling our eyes.
Yeah, because the fact that the infection acts so quickly, and these creatures are so fast as well, that when a character is taken out, it is brutally fast. And
so
it's important to have these characters have a presence. So because when they exit out, It's like they got hit by a bus.
And actually, Abe, that's a perfect lead into my main issue with this film, is that that's not true. We see several people get bitten by these zombies and turn to zombies within instants, a la World War Z. But then, at other points in the movie, somebody will get bit and have several minutes to... make us sad about them being bit before they finally turn, which I found very,
convenient.
it's very convenient for pulling at our heartstrings.
Oh, yeah, true. And
everything like that. And it's an inconsistency in the rules that they put forth for the zombies. But that's my one real issue with the movie.
Yeah. What I would want to look at is because, like, the first person we see turn is the girl on the train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one that sneaks onto the train.
Yeah.
Right, and she's bitten on the bottom of her leg.
That's right.
Right, so I'm curious, like, if the location of the bite had any effect on it or not. And because, I mean, you could always come up with different explanations. The big man is bitten on the hand. You know, was it somebody who turned more quickly? Was that, like, on the neck? You know, but this is pretty typical of the genre, which is, you know, right. someone that you're going to die at the most dramatically convenient moment possible.
Right. You know what I'm saying, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I do know what you're saying, and there was also that moment, too, when we first see that girl on the train, where it seemed like she was conscious. And I thought that was interesting, too, because, like, when he's talking to his mom on the phone and you hear her turn on the phone, that was a really well-done moment. I liked that. That was disturbing. And I've never seen that in a zombie film before, where he's having a conversation with the mother and you're hearing her turn into a zombie on the phone, but she's still conscious. So she's losing her conscious personality.
Right.
And
her inhibitions come out, too, where she starts saying your ex-wife is a bitch and all this other stuff.
Really well done. I mean, that was one of the things in this movie that I liked. And I do understand, you know, the comments about the lack of breaking the rules of the world. That didn't bother me as much because there were so many other really cool things going on that if the rest of the movie had been weak, I probably would have bitched more about that.
Right.
But because I thought the movie was good, I was like, oh, well, fuck it, you know, whatever.
And that's why I'm not over here going on an anger-filled rant, is because the rest of the movie is so good. I'll let it slide.
I do like some of the really clever ways that it gives the characters a chance to fight the zombies, even though they don't have firearms and stuff.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was really cool. Like, the big working-class guy puts magazines and stuff around his wrists and hands and stuff so he can punch the zombies while getting bit, which is really smart because of the way the flexibility and everything like that. It was just really cool because it was very creative, and also just, like, it was just different in a way, you know? It wasn't your typical, like, Walking Dead with Rick and 20 headshots with a revolver that only has 6 shots for some reason.
Well, and, you know, he clearly had read Max Brooks's Survival Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
Yeah.
he talks about stuff like that, using, like, cardboard and so forth to cover your arms, because people have very weak jaws. You know, we can't bite through that stuff. So I thought that was really neat to see somebody friendly use that. Whether he had come up with it on his own or he took it from Max Brooks, I don't know, but it was good to see.
Right, right. Yeah. It was interesting because since they're on a train, everybody's civilians, there's no guns at all, so everything has to be what you have around you. So there's a school baseball team, high school baseball or college baseball team on the train, so they are obviously able to have baseball bats. As Abe mentioned, cardboard and magazines and duct tape and things of that nature. I think they even had a fire axe, but I can't remember. I know they had a knife too and stuff. So you know, it's basically just things that you would find on the train, luggage, and whatever, and that's it. And they don't have enough time when they make their one stop to grab anything, because as they're leaving this humongous train station, because it's a big city, similar to, like, any train station you see, as Mike would know, New York City, or Chrissy would know, you know, you have to walk for a hell of a long time to get out. And before they can even get out, the military and police that were there to help everybody had already turned, and they start going nuts, and so they have to run back to the train.
And what I loved about, like, every time they encounter the zombies at every moment, even though there were some key moments where certain characters had, like, big dramatic death scenes, there are certain moments I kept thinking, this is the scene the character's going to die. Like, each time they go into a different car to get to the other characters, like, I'm thinking, this is where one of them's going to get bit. Not that one. Next car, and it's just like, because it can happen in an instant. Because they're fighting against the pretty much Zack Snyder zombies, or 28 Days Later zombies. They're not fighting your slow Romero zombies. These things are fast.
I liked how they did find, I guess not really a weakness, but a method of operation for the zombies.
Oh, yeah.
Which is that they're triggered by sight and sound. So if there's no light and no movement, they really don't try and attack anything because they don't know there's anything there. And in that scene that we were just referencing where they pull up to the other train station, in my opinion, the best scene in the movie is when they find out that all the military has been turned to zombies, and the zombies start chasing them, and there's a second floor with a window.
Oh, yeah.
And all these zombies get pressed up against it because they all see the people running to the train, and the window gives way, and all of a sudden it's just, like, raining zombies.
Hallelujah.
And all these zombies are falling onto the train, onto the sidewalk, and the one zombie falls and gets broken and stands up and starts chasing somebody, even though he's broken and his arm's, like, twisted behind his head.
That was really cool. That reminded me of Death Becomes Her.
Right. So that scene was the scene that got me all tensed up. Because, some people got taken out.
There was another cool scene that actually wasn't part of the main storyline, but they're watching TV on the train, mm-hmm. and they're showing these helicopters, military helicopters with like zombies hanging from it, and these kids in a parking lot are watching, and then the zombies eventually fall off the helicopters.
Oh, yeah.
Crash to the ground, and then they just get up and they wipe out the kids in the parking lot. It was kind
And there was another moment with the breaking glass when we were talking about them trapped between the trains.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right before.
Oh, that was the same thing, right, yeah.
Right, it was the same thing. But I don't know, I'm sure you guys caught it, but I went back and watched this little sequence twice, a couple times, because it was so neat. They had the train windows from the furthest back toward you, the viewer, breaking like dominoes.
Right.
Yeah. So it was like, pile zombies, pile zombies, pile zombies. It was so cool. I was like, oh my God, that is beautiful. Like, I rewound it a little and watched it a couple more times because it was just so beautifully done. And I'm sure it was CGI, but it was just,
zombies.
It was almost like
looking at art.
It was smooth.
It was art, yeah. It was very artful. I was like, that is really beautiful.
Yeah, but there was a flow to each moment, you know. I was like, very...
Yeah.
I think artful is definitely a case. It was very creative.
Now, one other thing that was really good about, there's a lot of good things, but one thing that I noticed that was awesome was, since the country is pretty much an apocalypse at this point, and they're trying to reach a certain point, almost like everybody, I'm sure this had partly commentary about everybody fleeing the North Korean, you know, that 47th parallel or whatever it is, and to the south, because you're safe. Everybody's trying to flee to certain cities because those cities are clear. And everybody still has cell phones. So this horror film, cell phones actually are there and they actually work. But it doesn't matter because there's nothing you can do, you know. So they use the cell phones, instead of getting rid of the cell phones in the movie by saying, you know, they don't work, they use them to an interesting fact where they can use them to, like, trick the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
So they call, they take two cell phones and they throw one down the aisle, and then they call that phone from the other cell phone, and then all the zombies go running over to that phone, and then they can sneak out the back door. I thought that was awesome.
I thought it was funny that it was the rich guy, well, not the rich guy, but the white-collar guy takes the working-class guy's phone to use as the booby trap.
I thought that was interesting, too.
It's like, take your own phone. Yeah, that would be, I just, and yet he didn't complain for some reason.
That's true, yeah. I don't even know. Was he really working class? I don't even know what I don't know what he did for a living, to be honest.
The big guy?
Yeah.
I think it's like blue collar. You know, he's guy gets his hands dirty. He, because
I guess they were implying he was, right? But I don't think they ever say what
he
does.
He makes babies, Phil. He makes babies.
He sure does. He sure does.
And drags his feet about naming them.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's another thing, right? There's a cliche character, the pregnant woman. But again, it works. And there's enough little backstory, like you just mentioned, Mike. Like, they're when they're just talking on a quiet point in the film, they say, my husband still hasn't figured out a name for the kids because I'm stumped, you know. And so we learn a little things like that throughout. And then so when there's deaths, as Abe said, they actually mean something.
Right. And at this point, he's introduced sort of as an antagonist
to the
main characters. So by introducing the pregnant wife, and the thing with him, like, you know, I made that, you know, and that he can't come up with a name for the baby, that humanizes him, right? It gives us a reason to like him. And he's actually one of my favorite characters in films in the last couple of years. I think he's a great guy because he's a little bit of an asshole, but not too much of an asshole. And you can totally understand.
She's a jerk of a hard gold.
Yeah, but you also understand exactly where he's coming from, right?
Yeah.
So, yes.
And as we come to find out, he's not the real asshole.
No.
No.
No, not at all.
So the real asshole, I want to talk about him for a second.
Yeah.
Because if they said who he is or what he does, I missed it.
His name was Young.
He was CFO of a computer company or something?
No, I think he's for that company.
What?
Yeah, he was the COO of maybe the train company?
No, he didn't work for the train company because he bullied people to listen to him because he didn't have the authority to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
So he was a COO.
He's wearing the same tie as the conductor of the train.
Yeah, I did not get that he was from the same company. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm not going to fight you, Mike. If you're sure, I'm not sure,
but I'm saying that's kind of what I was getting from it.
Okay, I didn't. I thought he was just some big company that COO or CFO. But either way, he is someone of note. He's got money.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's Dan Lynch from Circle.
Without the sweater.
If I were to make a top 10 list of movie assholes, this guy would be on it.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's seriously, directly because of this guy's actions, a whole bunch of people die.
Mm-hmm. But you know what was also cool about him being such an asshole, too? Like the rest of this movie with the character arcs, he was an asshole, but he was not your typical over-the-top villain. This was This was a guy that I could believe in real life would do this in this kind of situation. Like, I didn't look at it and go, oh, he's so evil. It was more like, okay, he was already an asshole, and now he's flipped his lid. Just like a real asshole would in real life.
Yeah, well, here's another thing, too, that most of these kind of villains in these kinds of zombie films or anything about Outbreak, it's usually a guy who's actually a scientist or someone who's trying to cover up something. But this is a guy who's pushed to do horrible things because he's not only a coward, but he's afraid for somebody who he wants to go see, which turns out to be his sick mother. He's a coward and a weasel, but he's doing it for a reason outside from your typical weasel.
I'm still going with Eric that at the beginning he was a little scared, but then at the moment where he says kick these people out of the train, that's when I said
I disagree with because I kind of understand because they don't know the rules at this point. They don't know because they haven't seen a bunch of zombie movies, I assume. Where for me it's when you get to a point where he's just betraying everybody, right? Where, like, he throws the person out, like, oh, no, the zombies are gone. You go first.
Yeah, he throws them out of the bath.
He literally throws two people to the zombies.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the player's girlfriends. He actually betrays the guy.
I would, Eric, I would actually say three, because they even grabs the conductor and puts the conductor between him and the...
No, the conductor tries to push him ahead, but when he falls, the conductor falls, he leaves him behind and dies with the zombies.
Right. So he's pushed... He actually, you could argue, begins murdering people to try to survive.
Yes.
He throws into the wolves, essentially, or the zombies in this case.
And that for me is the disappointing part, because you can make an argument, justification... for everything he does up through
throwing the guy out of the bathroom.
Right, including he just quarantines the group of survivors, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're just stuck in their own train car. It's which means what? They're starved for conversation?
Well, you could argue right before he quarantines them, he wouldn't open the door to let them in.
Right.
And that kills that alone kills three people.
But you can understand that. You should be able to understand that. He doesn't. Nobody there is arguing with him except for the one girl. They don't know if anybody's been bitten.
Oh no, I'm not disagreeing with you, Mike. You're right. That makes me hate his guts. And I would let them in, but I understand his reasoning at that point, even if it indirectly kills three or four people, including our favorite character.
But this is when I explained the lockdown drills to the students, is that when you have a lockdown, you know, you bring everybody into the room that you can, then you shut the door. You don't let anybody in because you don't know who's on the other side. So you and
right.
kids always want to argue. But Joey. I've got to get let Joey in. It's like Joey can have a gun to his head.
That has gone into flux now, though, Mike, ever since Newtown, Connecticut, because that's what happened in Newtown.
No.
There was a lot of uproar over locking the doors and people
That hasn't gone into flux as far as our security goes.
All right, maybe not your town, but it has in a lot of other towns.
No, because once you open the door to let people in, then you're putting yourself at risk.
Don't count on Mike during a zombie apocalypse.
Exactly. I understand.
Oh, well, see, this is,
saying that other people have already begun debating it. This is probably a more progressive folk, and it's a legitimate point.
Right. And I don't blame him for not doing it, because, again, we have more information than his character does at that time. No, he's definitely afraid for his life. I don't see anybody...
But a number of people quickly alongside him turn against the other group because they're afraid as well.
Well,
that's a legitimate panic fear reaction. I think they've actually done experiments where people actually behave in this manner.
And that was, I think, my one nitpick of the film was that everybody, and it was a good handful of people, not just like five or six, it was like 30 or 40, and they all agreed with the COO to quarantine.
I don't think it was all of them.
Except for the cheerleader.
I think it was people agreeing with him and then people staying silent.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody in the call was vocally disagreeing with him because they were afraid they'd get kicked off too.
Yeah, it became like a mentality that everyone had to adapt to try to stay alive because everyone started becoming afraid.
All right, so I guess that could be possible. I don't see myself being quiet or saying quarantine him. I think I would have said, "What the hell are you talking about?" So again, no, that's just one perspective. I have no idea. I've never been in the situation. I don't know how other people.
I was going to say that's easy to say right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was kind of funny. He was an interesting character for me because, well, I can say this because my brother doesn't listen to anything I say, but honestly, I could totally see my brother being this kind of an asshole in this situation. Totally. My brother was totally like this guy. The second he walked on the train, the first time we saw him, I go, oh, look, it's my brother Chuck. Yep. He's going to turn into a nice big asshole and kill a bunch of people. And sure enough, he did. So I was like, you know, I think it was, I guess maybe that's why this character I did not feel was over the top. Maybe it's a personal thing. You know, I don't know.
Chrissy, did we know that he was going to be a problem later in the film? Or did we know that he was going to make it to the very end? I mean, if he died quick, then obviously he wouldn't have a problem. But did we guess when we watch the film, oh, this guy is probably going to be one of the guys.
I mean, he kind of suspected just because they gave us, I wasn't sure, but they gave us a couple hints that, again, were subtle. Like, we saw him for a little bit longer. He got a little bit more time. But in much the same fashion as other people in the movie, one of the things I wanted to say was that even the minor characters had arcs, and yet they were quickly established very thoroughly. They gave us a lot of information about each of these ensemble characters in a very tiny little neat little packet so that it wasn't drawn out. So that just proves that these movies where they don't have good character arcs in an action film, it's bullshit. You can do it if you write it well.
It's all about pacing and knowing how to do some good writing.
Well, and like I said, with this villain, this guy who turned out to be the asshole, in all honesty, they gave us information pretty quickly that was kind of significant. That was the thing. They gave us significant things, and I was like, okay, if they're giving him stuff that's that significant, he's going to be around a while.
Right,
it wasn't just
true.
Like, ooh, I'm the dude who's bitching on the train. Oh, you know? Everything that they gave him had a significance or a weight to it. And then as the film went on, we saw a little more of him. Like every time they showed a clip of him or he entered the scene, he had a little more. He had a little more to say, or he had a little more to do.
Well, even though we could justify some of his actions, as Mike mentioned, us being the viewers knew he was wrong all the whole time. So he was easy to hate and definitely was someone we hated even before we could justify the point where we actually know he's pure evil.
Well, you know, his deterioration went along with the deterioration of the situation. The worse the situation became, so did he. He was a prick beforehand. He was a twitchy prick. But, you know, he became a complete full-blown asshole as things just got worse.
Yeah. And that again, you
can't find anything more, or few things more cliched in films than the jackass CEO who betrays everybody in the end. And that's like my one disappointment in the film.
Kind of like Meg.
And even he didn't become that big an asshole.
Right. He was more of trying to fix a problem. And cover the company's ass.
And was just incompetent. He wasn't like taking people and throwing them to the shark.
He didn't kill anybody. Absolutely.
No.
Not intentionally. Negligence, maybe.
So, one other thing, as long as we're talking about people being pricks, I'm wondering what your take was on, there are a couple of moments where our main character chastises his daughter for being considerate.
That was interesting.
At one point, she offers an old lady her seat, and he tells her that she didn't have to do that. And I was sitting there going, oh, man, that's like a shitty lesson to teach a kid.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Well,
I didn't understand it at all, yeah. Eric, except to make us dislike the character more. So when he does turn around and become the quote unquote hero at the end, that we would actually like him a lot. That's what I think.
Well,
anyway.
I think they were trying to show this character has for most of his life been very selfish or didn't really care much about other people, other things, and being a guy who's a manager and focused on money and investments, he's focusing on trying to survive as a businessman. And maybe those lessons he's trying to impart, I was trying to take care of yourself first, he was trying to impart into his daughter, who's honestly a lot wiser than he is.
Let me ask you a question, because what you're saying makes sense, but it also sounds stupid and not what you're saying. No, what I'm saying. not what you're saying, but what you're saying this guy thinks, because...
Well, I think it's impossible.
If I could interject and answer that question. The question I'm asking you, Abe, is if we know plenty of wealthy people, you probably do, I do, that would give their seat up for an old lady or a pregnant lady and still be, go for that, for the kill when it comes to their investment banking world, because that's his job. But when he's in the regular world, he doesn't act like that. So to have this father say something like that was as Eric said, like, it doesn't make sense except to just make a point, maybe, that us, the audience, shouldn't like him or something.
Well, I think what he's trying to do is show how he starts off being very similar in mentality to the evil CEO guy.
Okay.
And how their paths in this storyline diverge, where he becomes more selfless, okay, and how the CEO becomes more selfish.
Ah, that's a good explanation. Okay, that makes sense.
Well, I actually had a slightly different take or something I would like to add on to this, and that is, you know, we are dealing with a film that, like I said, is from a different culture. And so when that message was kind of coming through, and especially some of the messages about fatherhood and parenting, like, you know, fathers get the shaft and all this stuff, I was kind of like, I was wondering how much of this
was
actually a cultural thing, and not, because there's a difference in culture, you know?
Well,
from what I know, and I do not pretend to know anything about Korean culture, I really don't, but, you know, that's what I kind of thought. I thought, you know, maybe because I do know they are a very courteous people, they do, you know, maybe there's something going on there that I don't know about that is a cultural revolution where they want to be more selfish. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. All I know is that I took it as kind of a maybe. If I didn't understand it, I was like, oh, this might be a culture thing that I don't understand because I am ignorant of those cultures and what they believe.
It seemed it was only for that one character, though. I mean, like, it seems like, based off of what I saw.
Oh, no. Otherwise, was at least one other character that had the same message. Well, and I can't remember which
the,
one it
the
was.
Old ladies.
The old lady.
Oh, yeah, you're right. One of the old ladies was
right. That's right, what see, made me think it might have been cultural and not just like a random one-off, well, I think, because it happened.
Unless they were just trying to make the typical bad guys and the story arcs, as Abe said, which is to turn one person's story arc of enlightenment by the end.
See, I'm a little, sometimes a little confused by his story arc. Not completely, but because, yeah, it's, you do have the, you know, one day, you know, she'll understand, you know, why you do what you do, right? The idea that it's, you know, that the right, fathers the don't, you know, doesn't get any of the respect or the credit. Yeah. And I get that. And I think there's something to be said for that. And that's something that goes to just being a guy as an American society, I can at least speak to that, is, you know, we are not raised with, you have choices, right? We are raised with, you're going to grow up and get a job.
Right.
Or certainly, I don't know, and certainly not my generation, and I don't see it really in the current generation. So maybe I'm missing it, you know, but I don't see a lot of young men being raised, being told, if you want, you could stay at home and have a family. You know, that's not what I'm saying. But certainly for our generation, this would almost certainly include the generation of the two men we're talking about here, or the generation immediately after us. This is it. This is, you go, you do it. This is what's expected of you to do. You know, it's the song, The Cat's in the Cradle, right? You know, the,
yeah, right. You become your parent, yeah.
You become your father, and like, but you're the father loses a lot. You know, I certainly saw it with my father, who, you know, had a 2-hour commute to work every day. You know, so I, you know, and was too tired to really spend much time with me on the weekends. We did, and I love my father a great deal, but we did not spend a lot of time together through, you know, for about a 10-year period. But at the same time, so you can say that, but I'm not sure how much that we're expected to think that was in fact the reason why he was doing it. Because we see early on, like the first scene with him in the film, right, is he tells somebody not to do something because it's going to screw up the market, and then he immediately does it himself.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
So there is something of a lack of concern for other people. Part of it is, you know, so was he being shamed when he told? Was that? Oh, you know, you're doing it for his daughter, but was he? On the one hand, he bought his daughter the Wii that he bought her, you know, earlier in the year for her, for Children's Day. But you know, he did still remember it was her birthday. Where the cliche would be that he wouldn't even remember it was her birthday.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not entirely sure where we're supposed to be exactly with his character. The main thing is, part of it does remind me of my father, who would often give me the advice of not to stick my neck out for other people. But my father would be the first person to, like, pull over the side of the road and help somebody whose, you know, car had broken down. Or, you know, my father, you know, would always be the first one to stick his neck out for other people. So, my father...
So is this a gross exaggeration of that? In other words, by saying, don't give your seat up to for an old lady, he's basically symbolizing all this that you're talking about, that you're saying, Mike.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I think there's definitely a thing there, and there's, like I said, in the other podcast, male sacrifice is a big part of this story, you know, and it's especially epitomized with the big man and what he does. It's where the father, right, what is he becomes actualized when he sacrifices himself to save the little girl and save the pregnant woman. But he has to kind of learn to do that. His story arc is kind of learning to care about other people, because think about the bum, right? The homeless man.
The homeless guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Is the indigent person.
Right. He starts by telling him to, you know, not to follow him. Go away. You know, because he's got his secret out.
Right.
Right. And everybody else is marching off to be going into a quarantine camp, and he's got his secret way out, and the homeless man tries to follow along. And you compare that, and then what happens right after that is that he's fighting with the zombie. He gets up, the homeless man takes his jacket and throws it over the zombie to blind the zombie. And the zombie doesn't follow him, or basically helps him out in his fight with the zombie. So the homeless man helps him where he didn't help the homeless man.
Right.
So certainly the idea of learning to help people in is that character story arc.
Self-sacrifice and stuff.
But the question is, to what degree was he doing it already in the first place? And I guess you could also argue that when you do that, it's just easy to get consumed with your work. And we have to question, why was it? And again, I have no idea what the situation is in South Korea. I know what it is in New York. If the father has custody of the child, the mother has to be...
A loser.
Has to be terrible, right? Or has to have just walked out and... It's not easy.
In other words, a loser.
Right. And what little we get about the mother, right, we get the grandmother calling her a bitch, even though that's in the throes of the zombie virus.
Right. Well, and it's all, whether or not it's true, it's probably true because he has custody and she doesn't. But it's also a mother supporting her son over the ex-wife as well.
Right. So the question is, but is it typical in Korea for the fathers or the mothers to get custody? I don't know that.
Right, we don't. That's a good point. Yeah.
So my instinct is, as an American, is to think, well, that she has to be a real piece of work because he has custody. But maybe that's just typical there. I have no idea.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's a good question. If anybody who knows South Korean divorce and custody laws, please email darkdiscussions@aol.com.
Well, I would also like to see if our viewers could give some insight, perhaps the social kind of climate with there in terms of how people interact with each other. Perhaps there's something in this film that we're not kind of catching on with this theme of sacrifice and stuff.
Well, it's a sacrifice, and obviously this class warfare is a big thing because you have, if you think...
I mean, this is a pretty straightforward... compared to some of those others where, you know, it's hard. It's like definitely culturally different.
Yeah, but what I'm saying in terms of, like, why would the father teach her daughter to give the seat to an old woman?
I think it's what you said, to make him an asshole, so by the end of the film, he's changed.
But it's you know, even though I stand by that, I also wonder why it would be one thing to add to that, because it seems very dickish, even for someone like that, like something really weird.
It not only does it seem dickish, but it seems odd, because when the daughter offers, it made sense to everybody who was probably watching the film, even South Koreans. And then when he says that, it's like, what?
Well, because I think his concern is his daughter, right?
Right.
And
what does that have to do with With, I see.
Because his concern is his daughter. He doesn't care about the other people. He just wants what's right for his daughter.
Mm.
And he's not worried about... He's worried about protecting her and not about teaching her the right thing. If that makes any sense. Like, he's just looking at what's, making sure she has what she needs, and he doesn't care about anybody else.
Right, but even that, like Abe said, is an over-exaggeration for this, because it's like, it's just a seat.
Right, and at the same time, this is something that I, like, goes to the one thing I wrote for the blog a couple of years ago about Cub and some other things, is that we may be picking up stuff, or we may, there's stuff, because it's in a foreign language and we're getting subtitles, we may be missing things, and it may be, and sometimes there are lines that are, like, right on the nose. Right, and maybe it is not well written, and would be come across as much more obvious if we were watching this exact same thing transpire in English. Right, then we're being felt a little differently, interpreted differently, because we're seeing it in subtitles, and we're losing some of the performance, and you know, we're expecting. In other words, maybe it's more heavy-handed and badly written in Korean than it is when it's translated into American.
Well, that's probably very possible, because I've, you know, watched certain animes and certain other foreign films where certain translations are not exactly very accurate, even with professional subtitlers.
Well, let's move on, because we're just beating this over and over, and right. I don't think it has anything to do with cultural. I personally think it is that to make him more of a dick, so by the end that we'll see his change. But again, we're just arguing over the same thing. So let's move on to something else. Eric, what do you got?
Oh, I was the one to ask you guys to talk about that, so I'm happy.
Nice. What about you, Eric? What was your opinion on that, Eric?
I think it's a shitty lesson to teach a child.
Yeah, no matter what culture.
Right.
Yes. I would agree with that.
However, I think we should teach them to throw people into the zombies to get away.
No. Bad Mike.
Jesus.
I'll say it again, that you cannot trust people in the zombie apocalypse. That it's, in the end, it's the people that are going to kill you in the zombie apocalypse, which is why you have to betray them at the first opportunity.
Well, Mike, that's oddly what I said when we watched 10 Cloverfield Lane. I said, I wouldn't have let the guy in the first place.
Oh, so you're the COO.
No, because the moment you let them in, they try to take over. And then when they try to take over, they kill you.
Oh, man, I hope the zombie apocalypse doesn't start while we're in Mystic.
I would have been the person in the train that would have spoke up and said, no, we're letting them in and we're not quarantining.
Would you have done that if you had your daughter with you?
Yes.
Oh, there's an interesting question.
Because I've seen enough zombie films to know that you don't become zombied unless you get bit.
It depends on the zombie film.
And you don't know
if they were bit?
I don't know if any of the people I'm sitting in right now were bit either.
Well, if you just ask the zombies, they'll tell you.
Tell me where it hurts.
Were you bitten?
He's good. Let him in, folks.
All right, so let's talk about the homeless guy, because that was an interesting thing, because when the first time I watched the film and he got on, I was thinking he was going to be a problem, or he was already bit and he was going to turn into one later or some twist, and really the twist we find out is he's just a human being. And I thought that was pretty cool, because they were making him look like he was insane or one of those people that would slowly turn.
You thought he was going to be a zombie.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought at first, because he's stuck on a train just like the girl. So immediately that was my first thought. Then I'm thinking, oh, maybe he's infected somehow and he slowly is turning, and then like at the last minute he's going to turn into a zombie or whatever. And then again, it was all not the case.
No. Well, I think he suffered some kind of mental disorder anyway, so it made him seem very unpredictable at certain moments.
Well, I think the the disorder was that he just saw hundreds of people get murdered and
turned I think you're right.
That he snapped. I don't think it was because he was mentally ill, but you could be right, Abe.
Yeah. Well, it's also I think the fact that he was also a nice little different representation of the class themes.
Right. That's what I was going to bring up next.
Yeah, because, you know, he shows a great deal of selfless actions in this film compared to the father and the CEO guy for a majority of the film.
So the white-collar people are evil, and the working class and homeless are good.
Well, I think it's more the fact that they... It's part of it that bothered me, because it kind of went a little too black and white.
And then the old people, they're 50-50. They're either evil or they're kind.
The two sisters were actually very different people.
That's what I just said. The old people. One was evil and one was kind.
Yeah. Well, one was very embittered with everything.
Right, right. I wouldn't say evil. It was really more embittered with everything. Like, yeah, like the typical old person that frowns
like
at the kids.
Like me.
Right, but even older, Eric. You're still a young baby.
I'm young and bitter.
That's right. Young and bitter. Yeah, you're already turned.
A young, bitter baby.
Oh, maybe that's what they're trying to say, that when you become bitter, you've turned. So the zombie apocalypse, when you turn into a zombie, it's a symbol of becoming bitter with life and society.
Oh, my God, that's so cool. I'm so down with that.
Don't think it works.
Well, actually...
Well, I think it does. I think it's genius.
Yeah, because it's idealism versus cynicism, you know?
Cynicism, that's the word I'm looking for. Excellent.
Yeah, because, you know, you have the idealistic kind of kindness of giving all the seats to others and do all these nice things, and then you have the very cynical, very paranoid sense of everything where everybody else is out to get you, and you have to do everything you can to survive and protect the things you have.
Yeah, but you see, the nice old lady is the one that got bitten first.
Right, and the bitter old lady was one that killed everybody.
Yes.
So maybe she's trying to say that neither side is completely right and completely wrong.
Well, what it was is the good old lady basically stayed behind on purpose so she would get wiped out while the others were able to flee into the safety.
What I'm saying is that, her, you know, aside from a few people, her sacrifice was not really appreciated, you know, really honored.
That's right. Well,
and that's what bothered her sister. That's why she stabbed and let the zombies in.
Right. That's a good point, too. So she... It was like getting vengeance for what they did to her sister.
But she's like, you know, she was pretty much thinking like, I was right. You're doing all these nice things to people, and they screw you over in the end.
That's a good point. Also, I would like to state that she, even though she was in the group of people that were paranoid and all that, she wasn't. She was in mass depression, tunnel vision, because she thought her sister was dead. So she was just like a quote-unquote zombie, and you know, all depressed, and only woke up when she sees her sister and sees her sister's suicide to save the pregnant woman and whatnot.
It could be just kind of different because, you know, you have the young and Harris is also very different ages too. So maybe that's also to give different points of view on the way they view Burrow.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Because we have an ensemble cast with everything from late teenagers all the way to the elderly. And all of them were fairly logical or normal people. They weren't just like caricatures. So you didn't have stupid young kids that were assholes. They were just normal kids. They were normal people. And I that's a good point, Abe. I like it. Now, what about the zombies? Were they fucking awesome or what?
I just loved how freaking they were just... They freaked me out because they were on you in a second. Like, the very moment that girl who caught... The runway girl who got onto the train.
Yeah, yeah.
Her latching onto the neck of the what would we call them?
The attendee.
Yeah, the attendee. It was just so freaky.
I really enjoyed how frenetic the zombies were.
Yeah.
And once they turned, it was just pure instinct going after whatever. without any regard to anything else that was going on. I thought it was really well done.
Are they? Was this movie have the best zombies of all time?
Well, some of the ones I wouldn't want to fuck with.
Yeah, yeah.
They're pretty good. I don't know if I go best all time.
Yeah,
I still go with Tarman, but...
Tarman's still pretty
good. No, I mean as a whole group, Mike. Obviously, as a single, you're right, Tarman's probably the best. But as a group of zombies in a movie, I think these may be some of the most solid.
Well, I really liked... the zombies in this film as opposed to all the other zombies I've seen, because I know this is going to sound super stupid when I say this, but these to me looked real. They looked almost like if there really was going to be zombies, if there really were going to be zombies, this is what I would expect to see. They weren't overly made up. They were naturalistically, the makeup was very natural. It looked very organic. It looked like where most of them were gross, it was really about the blood all over their mouths because they were biting into other people. They had skin that had turned, of course, but it wasn't like really overly done. It was like how I would imagine it would look like a sick person dying of disease. Yeah, it did not look like here's the gray dripping flesh, here's everything rotting, it didn't look like that. And particularly while it may have gotten that way after they existed for a while, you know, a few years, like in The Walking Dead, it was nice to just see them kind of freshly turned, and also that the eyes were not overdone either. You know, a lot of times in zombie movies they make them, you know, with these freaky eyes and all this. It was just a very simple clouded eye, and it really just kind of looked like maybe a whole eye, a whole eye contact lens, and that just really worked for me. I thought that they were scarier because I could believe that if this really happened, this is what I would say.
Oh, the way they moved.
Yeah, and the way they moved, too, was really well done.
Right, and that a lot of credit goes to them because it's hard, I think, to get something to move in a way that's that kind of freaky, I think, to the movie Splinter, right, where they got the contortionist to do that. It's because a lot of times you just get the kind of generic. You either get the scrambling zombies, like the fast zombies of the 28 Days Later, or the remake of The Dawn of the Dead, or you just get your basic shufflers. And there's nothing wrong with that per se, but this is just something creepy about the way they move, right? And even if it was a normal person who moved that way, it's creepy.
And I particularly enjoyed the fact that because they were in an enclosed space, there were a couple different scenes where they literally started tripping over each other and quickly clogged up the pathway in the middle of the train and just created like a plug of zombie flesh. I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it looked kind of like a wave.
Right.
Yeah, and I also enjoyed, like, even though this is one of the prime examples of what I was complaining about earlier, about the variable change time, I did enjoy at the end when we get the confrontation between our hero and the CEO, how he didn't know he was infected. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was really unsettling. And
yeah, especially Abe when he says, "I'm scared," because you could feel, you know, even if he was a scumbag, you feel he was scared. You know, he knows something's wrong.
Yeah, and can you imagine how, because it's fast, regardless of how long it takes. The fact that you somehow are aware of it slowly eroding your senses is just terrifying. It is really scary because, you know, there's also the fact of seeing somebody you care about, like the baseball player with his girlfriend thrashing and shut, you know, almost like in a seizure-like state. It's just really heartbreaking. It's just scary as shit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let me ask you this. For a train going from Seoul to Busan, I felt that one thing that was interesting about this film, unlike a lot of Korean films, was that everybody was Korean. There was no foreigners on board. So there was no Japanese or Chinese. There was no Caucasians or blacks. Everybody was Korean. And I think that was probably intentional because
they're in
were
Korea.
Trying to... Yeah, I understand. But if you're on a train from Seoul to Busan, you would think there would be business people or tourists for sure, especially if you're going to Busan. So you would have definitely a lot of tourists, maybe from China, Japan, wherever. Never mind business people as well. So you figure that there would have been some foreigners, but I think that was intentionally written out of the movie completely because I think they wanted to just focus on maybe, as you were saying, Chrissy, this was some sort of commentary they were trying to say about Korea, especially when we see the class system. We see the few comments about men and fathers are forgotten, you know, things like that. So I think maybe they didn't want to messy the waters by having a train that would most likely have a small percentage of foreigners on board, just as any international train or any big train in any big city would have foreigners on board. Hey, Mike, you said, well, it's a Korean train, but yeah, I mean, if you're in New York City, you're going to have foreigners on the
train.
Yeah,
New York City is not is more well known as being a diverse, ethnically diverse city.
I'm not talking about ethnically diverse. I'm talking about foreigners.
Well, that ties into the ethnic diversity.
Well, right. But I mean, people from a foreign country would be on a train from, say, Baltimore to New York City.
Right. Well, first of all, I don't know that you would have picked up if there was anyone in that crowd of zombies that was, say, Japanese. Or, you know, from different parts of Indonesia.
I think this is a silly argument.
No, I'm not trying to say it's an argument. I'm saying I think they purposely didn't have that because they were, I think Chrissy was
or
more,
they,
right.
They didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it could have been...
There in Korea. They cast Korean people, and that's who's in the movie.
Right, but the only reason I say it was because every other Korean film I've seen, or a good percentage of them, always have some sort of foreigner, whether it was The Wailing with the Japanese guy. In The Host, we had a couple of Americans or Europeans in it. You know, and we can go on to more Korean films, and same thing. I mean, the Virus one that me and Mike have seen had Vietnese people in it. So, I mean...
I Saw the Devil?
Yeah, I Saw the Devil was such a small film there wouldn't have been foreigners, yeah, because it was really more just a police procedural. So there's a lot of them that do have foreigners in it. It was just a curiosity that I thought, especially since it took place on a train between two major cities. But again, just an observation. As you said, Eric, it may not even matter. What else? Anything else anybody want to bring up?
I did want to comment on some of... I mean, this film did really well in general, I think, with single effect in terms of maybe conveying a message. I didn't want to get too complicated with it because honestly I was really enjoying the film, and I think, you know, it was basically a zombie film, but it did have, you know, a couple of nice things in it. There's this whole theme about, like you guys mentioned earlier, seeing people, appreciating the people around you, and that is really keyed in where you talk about, you know, the zombies react on sight and daylight. There's a lot going on with windows and glass. There's the cloudy eyes of the infected, and yes, that is common in zombie films, but in this case, it also plays into the story single effect. What was particularly meaningful was when the girl said she couldn't finish singing the song because she couldn't see her father.
Oh, you mean that?
Not
you mean
that,
that
he wasn't
you mean
there.
That, explain the situation. Basically, there was a school play or something, and she had to sing a song, and she couldn't finish the song, and he had a recording of her video because he hadn't been there. So continue, Chrissy.
Right, and she didn't finish singing the song. Now, I don't know if this was because of the translation to English or not, and if the line is different in Korean, but he asks her later in the film, why didn't you finish singing the song? And she says, because I couldn't see you. Not because you weren't there. She says, because I couldn't see you. And so there were these nice references to, like I said, yes, you have cloudy eyes because it's zombies. You have windows breaking because it's zombies. But when you put all of that together, it makes for a nice single effect on the comment of one of the themes here, which is see the people around you, appreciate the people around you.
But also,
Also,
she does get to finish the song at the end.
Mm. Yes.
Which means that she knows her father is watching her.
Yes. Yep. Wow, Mike, I missed that. Wow, yeah. Damn.
That's a good catch, Mike. Yeah, well, I didn't even think of that.
Because the song, she was singing was what's the song?
Aloha.
Yeah, a farewell song. So it was appropriate.
Ooh, good, Abe, good.
It was appropriate towards the end because not only was she singing because she could see her father was watching over her, but she was saying goodbye at the same time.
Ooh, and, you know, nice, until we meet again.
Yes.
Lyrics of those songs are until we meet again.
So when she was singing that, before she started singing that, when they're in the tunnel, that last scene of the movie, when they're approaching and the soldier gets the kill order.
Oh, yeah.
First time you saw this movie, what went through your mind? Because they had just killed our hero.
I was thinking Night of the Living Dead, basically.
Yeah.
A lot of the South Korean films we've seen have pretty gentle writing, so I was like, oh, Jesus, I think I know what's coming.
I was just like, oh, no!
But you know what? It was a brilliant thing, though, because she just starts singing in the train tunnel, and we only see her silhouette and the pregnant woman's silhouette, and that's when they suddenly know, oh my God, they're humans. We're not going to shoot them after all.
Right, right.
It was brilliant. But it continues.
Well, and also, I think the pregnant woman was going into labor at the end.
Maybe.
So that was, the way she was holding her stomach and she was wincing in pain, I was like, oh, she's going into labor. So that was kind of a symbol of rebirth. So when I saw that, that kind of made me think, oh, they're not going to kill him. Because you have to, because they're trying to say, you know, the world is going to be reborn.
Right.
These characters learn new things, and so now their world, what's left, the two of them, is about to be reborn. So I knew they weren't going to kill them when I saw
that. They're
going to
regret it when that little zombie baby comes out.
Let me ask you this. What do you guys think of when her husband is about to get killed, and he screams out, I finally got the name. But he never says it, and he gets wiped out.
That was brutal.
No, he does. Doesn't he shout the name?
I wondered that, because I missed
I don't think he does.
I was thinking maybe he didn't.
He didn't. I don't think he did.
Unless I didn't hear it.
I thought it was the name he shouted to her, and then says, remember the name.
Oh, maybe. That's interesting. All right, we'll have to rewatch that to figure that out. Yeah, so you're saying that he screams out a name, but of course, since it's Korean.
I didn't hear him scream out a name. I did hear him scream out, I've got the name, and then they make eye contact, and he says, you got it? And she goes to say yes, and then all hell breaks loose.
Oh, so maybe it wasn't privy to, maybe we weren't really supposed to know what the name was.
Right.
The whole thing was we just needed to know that they knew what the name was.
Right,
right. And to be honest, she should just call it, name the kid after him if it's a boy.
Well, and maybe that's what he meant.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thinking. That's what went through my head today.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, so one of the things I was thinking of, if you notice who they chose as the main actors or characters in the film, for the actresses and the actors, they both represent a specific spectrum. With the actors, you have the homeless man, you have the blue-collar worker, the white-collar worker, the COO. And I guess you could throw the college kid in there somewhere.
Yeah, the baseball player,
with,
college kid.
With the women, with the females on that, you have the
older
child.
You have the child, then you have the cheerleader, then you have the expectant mother, and then you get the crone, right? You get the old ladies.
Yeah.
Right, and so they're kind of doing this cross-section. Again, some of that's there, but again, everything kind of ends up being sacrificed to save the young girl and the mother.
Right.
But I just thought that was an interesting thing that they didn't really double up on demographically on any, well, other than being all Korean. They all took a specific slice of...
Technically, the blue-collar guy is an American Korean, Korean-American.
Right.
Technically. But anyway, continue. Yeah, all right, so you're trying to say that they stuck with more stereotypical actors for or gender-specific type roles?
Well, sort of, yeah. And they, but they took fairly iconic things where these characters actually could represent a something specific. In the case of women, ages and where they are in their life cycle, and for men, where they are in terms of career.
Mm. Oh, I see what you're saying. That's a brilliant point. Yeah, it's not even gender-specific. It's just a spectrum of what they were trying to get at. Yeah, I get it. Continue, Mike. That was good.
Yeah, that was just a thought. And again, that ties into some of the themes that they were working with in the film.
Yeah, I think I could see that as well.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I mean, it's almost like Edvard Munch's Three Stages of Woman, and for the guys, it was basically... innocence or idealism all the way to cynicism, I guess. So, yeah, that's an interesting point. Let's see. What about those train stations? Those things were fucking huge.
Oh, they're massive.
They remind me of the one in Boston at North Station. That's just like that. It's like crazy.
Well, they have real trains over in Asia.
No, that's true.
Did you notice the speed on the phone when they were tracking where they were?
No, no.
It was like 186 kilometers an hour.
What's that mean? No, I don't even know what that meant. So I didn't do.
Well, but they're bullet trains. They go faster than our trains too.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So they use them more.
Nice. Yeah, that's right. I think everywhere except North America and South America, there's no trains. But Asia and Europe, the trains are like awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, because I think that's their primary mode of getting around. You know, unlike here where everybody has cars and whatever.
Yeah, we have car culture here in America.
Yeah.
Well, I would say both Americas. Yeah, not just USA, but all of America. Yeah, it's car culture. Because Brazil and Canada and the U.S. and Mexico, it's like everybody just drives. There's no trains.
I have no idea about south of the border. I've never been.
Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mexico City is like the biggest traffic car city in the world, I think. It's like crazy. Yeah. But, yeah, if we're just talking specifically U.S., since that's what we know. Yeah, here it's always been cars. Yeah. I mean, we don't even have trains that go up to Montreal or Toronto anymore, for that matter. So
well, there's trains that go all over. The trains were here before cars. We just kind of stopped developing the train thing at a certain point.
Right.
Whereas other countries kept on going.
And even freight trains, it's been studied, at least in the States, that tractor trailer trucks up in U.S. and Canada, it's in Mexico too, for that matter, it's cheaper than in trains for some reason. That's why the train freight trains never took off, was because the tractor trailer trucks were
well, and soon we'll efficient. Have automated trucks just like in Logan.
Oh, don't say it. We can't.
It's coming.
No, we got to keep those jobs for MJ Preston.
It's coming.
We can't make MJ Preston.
We have no say, Phil. It's happening.
Well, hopefully not for a while. What else do we want to talk about? Anything else of interest?
How about that final scene between Nick, the father, and her daughter?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, that daughter. I don't care.
Rip my heart
says,
out.
Yeah.
She is a damn good actress, dude.
Holy shit. I was. That tore me apart.
Because she was bawling to the point, like, that's truly how people would act. And even after, when all of it was said and done, like we said, in the tunnel, when they're walking through the tunnel, she was still massively depressed, and it was brilliant. She was brilliant.
Yeah, I really was so impressed with her. I was just like, wow.
Well, I was like, watching her and thinking... While she was screaming, I was like, wow, for a little girl, she has very large molars.
Well, and I particularly liked the death of the father. I really liked how they handled that with having him have his flashback to when she was born.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just see his shadow when it happened.
Silhouette.
And I thought that was beautifully done.
Yeah.
It was such an emotional moment. And I thought things about South Korean films that really blow me away is that how they deliver some heart-wrenching kind of moments that just get to you.
Yeah, you know? And you know what it kind of reminded me of was Zack Snyder, James Gunn's Dawn of the Dead, the Best Buy television salesman, where he gets bit, and we find out at the very end that he gets bit, and he says, you know, you guys go, and then he puts the gun to his head and blows his brains out. And I was like, it reminded me of that, because he's a hero that we've been following the entire film, whether it was that film or Busan, and basically he's dead. You know,
yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, what a, you know, beating. Never mind the fact that the loved one.
All because of that asshole COO.
Exactly.
But this is a trope. I don't want to say cliche. It's a trope in zombie films, right?
Sure.
The character gets bit and sacrifices himself. The idea that, you know, you make it this far with this particular group of characters who we've been following most of the film. The old woman is really the first character that was that was killed. That was a character we've been following, right?
Oh no! Actually, I think before her was the blue collar guy. He was the first because then
dies. You're right.
She dies like 5 minutes after him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts to go. But we're actually at the point thinking, well, maybe they'll make it through. Especially when you have a story focused on a young girl, right? You know they're not going to go A Quiet Place on us.
Yeah, right.
And so you kind of see some of this coming. You still have hope that the father's going to make it.
Right.
You're pretty sure they're not going to kill off the pregnant woman after the after the blue-collar guy does that whole sacrifice thing. But because the whole point of the film is for him to learn something. But, you know, he does, and then he dies. That's why you don't ever learn anything.
right, because it doesn't matter if you learn something or not, because you're dead. Right?
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, he could have still been an asshole. His daughter might have made it.
Well, it's like the dangers of being a mentor in any kind of fantasy story. You're going to fucking die next.
Yeah, poor Qui-Gon.
Yeah. Poor Obi-Wan!
Oh.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Obi-Wan, yeah. Damn. Eric, they brought up Star Wars. Star. I know. It's Abe's fault.
I said it first.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. The scene with the father and daughter was powerful for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually forgot a lot of it. Because I remember the first time I ever watched it, I felt a little bit, was like Mike said, kind of tropey. But rewatching it, since I watched it a little differently, because, you know, the first time I was watching it, I was like, holy shit, this is just nonstop action. I was watching the character development more in the second watch 2 years later. And so it didn't feel as tropey. It felt, even though it is tropey, it felt more satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Well, tropes are not always bad. It's just how you execute them.
That's true. I mean, they're around for a reason.
Yeah. There's a reason why they keep on popping up and cliches keep on popping up, because whatever they are, they work.
I mean, right? the sacrifice scene could have, you know, been handled badly by another director. Well, it was handled really well here, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else anybody want to bring up? Anything?
One last thing, since everyone else seemed to complain about their thing they wanted to complain about. The one nitpick I would have had was the scene where they had 2 minutes in the tunnel to make their way through the train.
I don't get... What part was this?
The part in the movie when they were in the tunnel.
Oh, dark. Okay.
I'm sorry. When it was dark.
And they were in the tunnel. And they said, we got 2 minutes. Like, they have 2 minutes to get around the zombies. So they decide to climb over the luggage rack.
Yeah, that was weird.
And first, it's weird that they're able to climb across the luggage rack without making a noise.
How do they know it's 2 minutes? Because
they did the math. How fast the train was traveling and how long the tunnel was. That was using that cell phone, right, that you mentioned earlier. But I did find it hard to believe they could do that, climb up, get all of them onto the luggage rack, and scoot along the luggage rack quietly in 2 minutes of time.
And without having the luggage rack come down.
And without having the luggage come down.
Yeah.
That was my question. I was like, wow, those were kick-ass luggage racks. But then again, you know. Well,
they do have to hold up the luggage. The luggage.
Did it work out, though? I don't think it worked out, right? Or was it after the fact that it didn't work out?
Like
it was kind of after the fact, right?
Yeah, because you stepped on a can. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
That was the closest thing we had to comedic relief in this movie is when he stepped on that can.
Yeah.
Right.
Hence, train to bus can.
Bus can.
Goddamn Red Bull or whatever the can was.
Bus World.
That's a fair point, Mike. It didn't really bother me either time I watched it, but
I noticed it on the second watch, but I didn't really care.
Yeah.
That's a minor thing. We'll have something to pick on.
Well, there was a couple other minor things I had. It was like the cell phone. They could have slid the cell phone and immediately just ran into the other room and shut the door. And I don't think they did. It was more, I don't know. There was a couple of things I would have done a little differently with the cell phone, calling the cell phone and having them get attracted to the cell phone. And then with the second cell phone, even though you only have one phone left, you can always put one of those timers on so you can toss the phone. And then like 2 minutes later, the timer would go off and go ding, 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 ding. And then they would chase that. So I think they could have passed the zombies a little easier had they used the cell phones a little more wisely. Even if there was only two cell phones. Comments, questions, opinions?
Nope.
Fuck yourself.
No.
Anything?
Who would ever tell you to go fuck yourself, Phil?
Jesus.
Face someone on Facebook, I'm sure. We've all had that happen for no reason, except for having an opinion. anything else anybody wanted to bring up?
One last thing on my end. I just found out that it's going to be a sequel to Train to Busan by the same director in the works right now.
Oh, that's nice. That's good. I would say, besides that fact, I would recommend everybody to see the film Soul Station. The same director. Again, he's more of an animator than a director, because directing was his second thing. He was more of an animation director rather than a regular director. The Soul Station is a prequel to Train to Busan, and I was able to see it, and it's friggin' awesome as well. And
where did you find it?
Basically, you can rent it on VOD anywhere, iTunes.
It was on Shudder.
Oh, well, okay. But it is on iTunes. You can rent it. That's. But I was able to see it on a screener from Jason Lloyd, because I had to do a review for Jason Lloyd's Bloody Bits, and so I did it on that, and so I got to watch it, and then literally a day or two later after I did the review, it popped up on iTunes and you could rent it, and me and Mike actually were discussing at one point maybe doing an episode on it, and it never came into fruition. Mm-hmm. But it's really good. It's there's ingenious things too, like for example, someone grabs a fence, a piece of fence, you know, similar to you know, defense, that type, those white picket fences, and uses it as a ladder. So he rips it; they rip it off the house's side, you know, the whatever lawn, and then they turn it to the sideways and they use it to climb up to get onto a roof. I mean, it's a lot of cool stuff, and the you know, it's not like just a cheesy story. It's as good as if it was a real live action film.
Yeah, it is on Shudder. So if you have Shudder, you can watch it without paying for it.
Cool.
Yeah, it's high recommend. It's awesome. It's really good. And it's by the same director, so you know it's not going to be ruined. Plus, I already saw it, and I can verify that it's solid. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up? So sequel's coming. You can see a prequel that's already out.
Well, let me ask you this. If they were to do an American remake, where would the train be to?
I would say Baltimore to New York. That's what it should be, but it could be probably something like to Chicago, to New York or something. Probably. Or L.A. It'll be L.A. to Nevada or something. I don't know. But I would do Baltimore to New York. That.
Well, then what would be the stopover city? Philly?
Yes, exactly. Philly would be perfect. Yep.
How would you tell if Philadelphia was zombified?
Oh, well, that, because of the cell phone suit.
They're all so fucking rude. It's like they're trying to eat you anyway.
That's the reason it wouldn't be trained to Detroit.
Well, that's the thing about the Northeast, Eric, is that the United States, everybody says we're rude, but really what it is we just want our privacy. However, if you come and ask us a question, we're very polite and we'll answer for you. Mm-hmm. So if you ask for help, we'll help. But we just want to be left alone.
Unless it's a zombie apocalypse.
Well, that's everywhere. I mean, we saw this guy in Korea throwing people out of the bathroom to get eaten so he could run away. You know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't be too friendly to other people in New England, Phil, because they'll look at you like you have seven heads if you're too friendly, or they'll think you're bizarre or something.
That's my point, Chrissy.
I'm staying here in Michigan, confined to my home with my cats. I'm good.
That's my point. But my point, Chrissy, we mind our own business. We don't try to be overly funny. However, if someone asks us for help, we help them and be polite to them.
It's true. And it is because the weather sucks here, and it's always gray, and there's really not a hell of a lot going on.
I think it's also part of the Yankee upbringing, where the Yankees have always been, like, kind of, like, to themselves and
reserved, you know,
very reserved.
Yeah. It was interesting. A perfect example of that. You had mentioned the Newtown shooting earlier in the podcast.
Yes.
You know, that town is not even 10 miles from me, and I have friends who live there. And it was interesting because on CNN, when they were covering the news, the newscaster gets on, and the first thing he says is, "I'm standing here in Sandy Hook, Connecticut, where this close-knit community is in shock." And I sat there and I looked at my husband, Nathan, and I went, "Close-knit community." And he went on about, like, and they know what they're all doing. And I looked at my husband and I said, "Where is this guy from? Has he never been to New England? Because I don't know what the hell my neighbors are doing."
Yeah, it's all bullshit.
I don't know. That's total bullshit. Where did you get that from? Somewhere else in the country, because it ain't like that here.
It's CNN. What do you expect, you know?
I know, but it was just funny because then we started thinking, well, how much do I really know my neighbors? Now, I have three neighbors.
Right.
One of the neighbors I'm very close to, he's my friend. The other two, I've been living next to those families for 21 years. I don't even know what their names are. I don't know what cars they drive. I have no idea. No idea.
No, it's true. Yeah, well, when I was living in Hudson, New Hampshire for 20 years, I spoke to the woman across the street a few times, you know, because she lives across the street. And then every other neighbor I spoke to, never, once.
Yeah.
So except for one woman where she was asking me to move.
So in a zombie apocalypse, New Englanders might actually survive because we don't associate with each other anyway.
Right.
And it didn't have any chance to spread.
Cool.
Right.
You know, I mean, seriously, they could be murdering people and torturing young girls in the house next door, and I would have no idea. No clue.
Well, it's not because you're a bad person. It's just that you offer your privacy to everybody around you and vice versa. It's just a New England thing. It's just a New England thing. Oh, I remember when I was in Paris, and people were telling me that they were all rude. They were just like New Englanders. They weren't rude at all.
It was like, "What are you talking about? This is just
the same thing as how New England is in New York. You know, it's all right."
Yeah, but they couldn't understand Phil in Paris either.
Oh, ow.
I'm sorry, man.
That was funny.
Hey, anybody that says super dark times, no one can understand someone like that. Super dark times.
Oh, boy.
That's the best film ever just because of the title and how I say it.
So, I'm surprised they never did Super Dark Times on Hakada.
Hakada. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, the Boston accent. What are you going to do? Siri is my worst enemy because of my Boston accent.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, it's terrible, dude. It's terrible.
If it makes you feel better, it doesn't understand people who speak normal English either.
All right, I don't feel bad then. Okay. Even though other people I know, they say, I don't have any problems. It's like, what?
Oh, they're lying.
Yeah, they got to be lying. Yeah.
Liar, deceive us.
It works about 95% of the time for me, but I don't usually do much more than ask for the time or to set an alarm.
Yeah, if you're asking a common thing, it'll probably get it. If you start to go off the...
Abe saw me. I was trying to get directions. I go, Lowell, Massachusetts, and it comes up Van State, Wyoming.
Yeah.
It's like, what? What? And then I go, Hyatt Hotel, Mohegan Sun, and it comes up, I don't know what you were saying. You know? For Christ's sakes. So I have to pull
all
over.
All right.
Anyway. All right.
You have numbers. Type it in.
Anybody else have some last thoughts on Train to Busan?
Yeah, let's give our final thoughts. So let's go around a table. So, Eric, why don't you start?
I think this is a fantastic Korean zombie movie. I highly recommend it.
Excellent. I would state everything Eric said, except it doesn't matter that it's Korean. It's just a fantastic zombie movie. All right, let's go with Chrissy.
I was going to say that even if you are not a zombie film person, for me personally, now I have not seen as many zombie films as all of
Mike,
you guys have.
Mike?
Yeah, as anybody, really. I've only seen a handful. So of the few that I've seen, maybe the 5 or 10 I've seen, I would say this is my favorite of all of them. I'm not going to say it's the best. I'm just going to say it's my favorite. But I would say that I think people who even don't really like zombie films or would be a little timid about seeing a zombie film, I think this is a good place to start if you're okay with doing subtitles. I think it's a really good film. It's just a good movie in general, and it's just a really good movie with zombies in it. I mean, that's kind of how I would look at it. I really love this film, and I highly recommend it.
All right, very good. Mike?
Yeah, this is probably a top 5 zombie film for me, maybe even my number 3. It's not there to dislodge Night of the Living Dead or Shaun of the Dead for my
really?
Top 2.
Better than Returns?
Right. Yes. Wow. There's some really terrible acting in Returns. It's a fun movie, but there's some really terrible acting in it. But I think, my Korean's a little rusty, but I think the main thing is to take away is the message of the film, which, if I can pronounce this correctly, is "Salam Dio Yang Piao Piao Yo," as I think is how it's pronounced. And it's, I think Eric, you could probably tell us that translation.
People suck.
That's it, exactly. Yes, that's it.
Oh wow, I didn't even know I knew Korean.
Nice. Anything else, Mike?
No, that's it.
All right, Abe.
This is a great film. It's well acted. It's intense. It's really well directed. It's just an enjoyable ride. I definitely recommend it. Zombie film fan or not, it's just a great film to see. I know it's on Netflix right now. If you have Netflix, that's a great place to see it. Be sure to, if you have Shudder, the prequel is also there. So go check them out.
All right, very good. So that's Train to Busan. Arguably one of the best zombie films of all time. Everybody pretty much probably agrees there. Once again, directed by Sang-ho Yuan, who is a pretty talented guy because of animation films and, as we see here, live action. Great cast. No comic relief characters, thank God, and special effects was awesome. All in all, a top-notch film by far, and was most certainly a film that deserved to play at Cannes Midnight Movie Fest. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Train to Busan. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
Oswald.